A 17-year-old accused of the murders of two teenagers in rural Orange County had his first day in Superior Court yesterday. Just a brief procedural hearing, but it was the first public appearance for Isaiah Ross of Mebane since he was named as the lead suspect in the September killing of Lyric Woods and Devin Clark. 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell was there.
Despite there being dozens of people in the room on Tuesday for Isaiah Mackay Ross's appearance, there was a tense silence for several minutes. Many friends and family members of Lyric Woods, the 14-year-old murder victim from Orange County, sat together in the room wearing t-shirts with photos of Woods and remembrance slogans. Others in the courtroom held hands or locked arms, remembering Woods and 18-year-old Devin Clark, whose bodies were found together off Buckhorn Road in Orange County on September 19th. The pair were friends, say their families, and were separately reported missing earlier that weekend. There was little new information about the high-profile homicide case shared during Tuesday's proceedings, which lasted just barely 2 minutes among many other cases on the docket. Ross was ushered into the room in handcuffs after his name was called, still wearing street clothes, and sat expressionless as it unfolded. His attorney said two motions have been filed, one being a bond motion and another being a motion for the return of property.
We were in agreement, and I understood that we wouldn't be addressing either of those motions today. I just wanted to put them on file so that we could schedule a time appropriate for the court and the DA's office for them to be heard.
Okay.
Superior Court Judge Alan Bedour allowed for both of those motions to be continued to the December 13th session of the criminal court, where Ross is being tried despite being a juvenile due to the charges of first-degree murder.
Is there anything else we need to address today?
No, sir.
Not from the defense at this time, Judge.
All right.
Thank you all. We'll see you all in December. Thank you, Judge.
After that, Ross left the courtroom, and many of the community members there in support of Lyric Woods and Devin Clark left as well. The group declined to speak to media members in attendance, as did those who left with Ross. The teenage suspect was put into an unmarked car in a secure part of the courthouse property, which then opened its gate and let the car take Ross back to a juvenile detention facility. While there are many details still not publicly known, Ross's first appearance is just an initial step to likely learning more about this tragic case in the coming weeks and months. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
The Chapel Hill Town Council meets in Town Hall tonight at 7. It's their second meeting already this week, and tonight's agenda is a long one. Council members will consider a request to increase construction funding for the Rosemary Street parking garage, a proposed funding plan for affordable housing, and a possible affordable housing amendment to the town's land use management ordinance, or LUMO. Council members will also hear a resident's request to turn the entire former American Legion property into a public park, and they'll vote to appoint UNC student Cortland Gilliam as the town's next poet laureate. On campus, good news for drivers heading to the area around UNC hospitals. The Dogwood parking deck is finally back open today. That deck has been closed since last week Thursday as crews worked to repair electrical damage that had been caused by a vehicle fire. Now we head up the road to Creedmoor, where two friends have been attending high school football games together for the last 20 years, but their experience is a little bit different from the norm. Carolina Connection's Brianna Atkinson filed this report from South Granville High.
It's Friday. Two friends are at a home football game in Creedmoor, North Carolina, both in light blue South Granville High School t-shirts. Hayden Shackelford is wearing a hat to protect his head from the bright sun, and Tom Husketh is wearing dark black glasses. As the two stand on the sidelines, Shackelford leans in to chat with Husketh about a passing play.
There's the kick.
Cover it!
And receiver sees the ball, he takes off to the left,
cuts
through to the right,
cover
and he's tackled around at the 40-yard line.
This isn't any ordinary game conversation. It's a live play-by-play. Shackelford is the announcer, Husketh is the one-man audience. Because Husketh isn't seeing players tackle each other or score touchdowns, and his dark black glasses have nothing to do with the sun. Husketh is blind, and he's been that way since he was a baby. For the past 20 years, he and Shackelford have done this ritual at South Granville Games, where Shackelford watches, Husketh listens, and they both make predictions about plays.
Okay, call your play. What you think they're going to do, Tom?
Field goal.
You think they're going to go for a field goal?
Yes.
That far back?
Yeah.
On the 30-yard line? I mean, she's got to kick it almost 40 yards.
Not, I don't know. They might go for a pass.
Huskett's love of football didn't come from playing the game. It came from experiencing his older brother Bill play the game, right on the South Granville field. But instead of having a personal play-by-play, Huskett relied on the announcer.
Now you notice he's not describing it like Hayden's doing it.
They got, again, double backfield, turns, he does a reverse pivot, and there's a pass. He throws, oh, and it's knocked down.
Shackelford has always loved football. He loved it when he was a linebacker and guard in high school. He loved it when he taught the game as a middle school football coach. And he has always loved talking about it. So when he met Huskett, a fellow fan who needed the game described in real time, he knew it was something he was meant to do, even though he'd never done anything like it before.
I know when we first started, I couldn't do it like that because in a lot of instances, he didn't really know what I was talking about because during the ball game, even the announcers don't really call it that way because they're talking to a crowd that is visual. They're running a double backfield. He went in the center. He gave it to the second man through. He's taking off to the right.
Yeah.
And he's got some room. That's a good run, Tom.
But over the years they've been going to games, Huskett has learned the plays, penalties, and even the yards. And he's still learning.
Anytime they change a new formation, then a lot of times I have to kind of explain, Tom, what formation they're in and where the different players are located.
Like last year, when Huskett learned the triple option offense.
You have your quarterback and you have your two running backs. He can put one back in motion. And during all the time, he's reading what the defense is giving the man. So the quarterback can either do three things: hand off to the back, or keep the ball, or pitch it.
And through those decades, the two have developed more than just a special code. They've become best friends.
So what do you think? You think he's going to pass the ball?
Yep.
Okay. You're probably right.
Come with the pressure.
I know that's what I do.
Most of their friendship is this, going to games and making predictions about plays. But it's also in the time they spend off the field, talking football.
After the ball game, I know the ride home, all we talk about is what happened in the ball game and why we won, why we lost, what certain players did. And we don't talk about very much other than that.
But nothing beats the time they spend on the sidelines of the South Granville field. In Creedmoor, I'm Brianna Atkinson.
For Carolina Connection, a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media that airs Saturday mornings at 8:30 on 97.9 The Hill. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by CIMG Residential Mortgage. Pete Nance had a breakout game, and Carolina basketball needed every bit of it as the top-ranked Tar Heels struggled to a 72-66 win over Gardner-Webb in the Smith Center last night. Playing in his third game as a Tar Heel, Nance put up 18 points before fouling out. Caleb Love ended up leading the way in scoring with 20, and R.J. Davis had his first double-double of the season, 14 points and 10 boards, but UNC failed to pull away from the Bulldogs, who came in as 20-point underdogs. After the game, a less-than-happy Hubert Davis.
Well, all of our games are tough. It's hard to win at this level, and we respect every opponent, and every time that we have an opportunity to compete, it's always going to be tough. We're going to get the best out of every team we play, regardless if it's non-conference or conference play. We'll continue to talk about it. We'll continue to practice it. One of the things that I think helps with hunger and thirst is playing time and lack of playing time. As I said before, a long time ago since I played, but I do remember that gets your attention. And that's one of the things that over the next 3 or 4 days, it will be addressed, it will be reevaluated, and it will be tweaked and pivoted and changed and altered to make sure that we're playing the way that we can play out there on the floor.
That's head coach Hubert Davis there. Tar Heels back in action Sunday, hosting James Madison at noon. There's also basketball action today as the 13th-ranked Carolina women hit the court at 11, hosting a midday game against South Carolina State. Junior Deja Kelly just got a big honor. She's been named to the preseason watch list for the Wooden Award. That goes to the National Player of the Year. In football, UNC is up two spots to number 13 in this week's college football playoff rankings. Two Tar Heels racking up individual individual honors as well. Drake May won ACC Quarterback of the Week for the sixth time this year, while Josh Downs was named ACC Receiver of the Week for the second time in a row. Drake May also earned national honors. He's been named Davey O'Brien National Quarterback of the Week and National Offensive Player of the Week by the Walter Camp Foundation. Finally, a scheduling update on UNC soccer, as both the men and women are set to host NCAA tournament action tomorrow on Dorrance Field. UNC men taking the field first, facing High Point at noon. That's a first round game. And then the women will follow with their second round game, taking on Georgia. That one's been moved up slightly, originally scheduled for 5 p.m. It's now going to begin at 3.